Okay. Good evening and welcome everyone to the 529 Emergency Preparedness Discussion Net, courtesy of the WA7ABU 529 repeater. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo. My name is Brett and I'm net control for today, December 29th, 2020. This net meets each Tuesday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. local time on 145.29 megahertz. This is designated emergency frequency, so it'll break if any real emergency occurs. Our alternate frequency is 145.19 with a tone of 100. We appreciate those who stand by and allow us to have a clear frequency for the next hour as we discuss emergency preparedness with an emphasis on the COVID-19 pandemic, vaccines, variants, and strains of COVID, that kind of stuff. But if you'd like to talk about something else, we could do that too. So anyway, all amateur operators are welcome to participate in the discussions during this net. Start with a check-in of the stations that would like to participate or maybe just listen in on the discussions. When you check in, please identify with your call sign slowly and phonetically and also your name and location to be recognized by net control. Let's see if there's anybody out there on the Echo Link who would like to check in for an emergency preparedness net. Come now, please. Okay, not hearing anyone on Echo Link. Let's take general check-ins for the emergency preparedness net.
Good evening. This is Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, Art and Canby.
Hi, Brett. Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike, Steve Albany on a handheld.
Okay, well, there's Art, Kilo 7, Alpha Romeo Tango, and Steve, Whiskey 7, Sierra Hotel Mike. Welcome to the net. Anybody else?
Good evening, Kilo Foxtrot 7, Bravo Uniform Victor. This is Walton Woodburn.
Kilo Julia 7, November Uniform X-ray, Crittenden, Salem.
November Whiskey 7, Oscar Romeo, Richard in Albany.
Okay, let's backwards on that one. That was Richard, November Whiskey 7, Oscar Romeo, preceded by Crittenden. Kilo Juliet 7, November Uniform X-ray. And then Walt started that. We'll group off there. Kilo Foxtrot 7, Bravo Uniform Victor. And Walt, we got your CERT group in Salem is set up with their Marty and Jeff, that is, with Winlink. So hopefully they sent you a test message. But they got their signal link working out. Just a side note for you guys. Anyway, we're taking check-ins for the emergency prep net.
This is Kilo Juliet 7, Tango Bravo Whiskey.
Hello, Brett. This is Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo Uniform.
Okay, sounds like another break in the action there. That's Dan, Whiskey Alpha 7, Alpha Bravo Uniform. Preceded by Bill, Kilo Juliet 7, Tango Bravo Whiskey. And Richard started that group off by Whiskey 0, Echo Delta Foxtrot. Thank you all for checking in. Anybody else? Okay, this is emergency preparedness set, and we're taking check-ins. Okay, well, maybe we'll just be a small group tonight. Let's take a pause here and do some announcements for the net. Dan, do you have any announcements or anyone else? Come now, please.
Maybe you.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, you might join us tomorrow night for the slow scan net. You may have noticed that ISS is transmitting almost continuously. At least when they come over us, they always seem to have an image for us. I'm getting one or two very broken up pictures, but they do have a strong signal. Apparently my verticals just have too much gain, and the images are broken up by at least two weak signals in between. Because the vertical has a pattern that isn't very helpful. Anyhow, I get to see the slow scan images, and even though they aren't quite perfect, I have two or three that look pretty good. You might join us tomorrow night for the pictures we're going to be passing around. That's 8 o'clock, like usual, on this repeater. Programs are pretty simple to get a hold of and free. I think the iPhone might charge a tiny bit for theirs. And hope to see you then. On Tuesday nights, you may have noticed all the different things going on today. Back to you, Brett, WA7ABU.
Okay, very good. Let's see. Anybody else have any announcements they'd like to bring up? Okay, well, anyway, we'll do some technical topics tomorrow. I have our Wednesday TechNet, and I'll be running that one too. So, let's see, I don't think there's really anything to, that I can think of other than what we're going to get into now. I'll go over the Oregon numbers again on the coronavirus. Trying to follow the data as the trends. And the good news is from change from last week to this week that our numbers in Oregon look better this week. And I think what you'll find is, I've tried to talk about trends, and I think that the important trend to look at is always the hospitalization trend, because it's the one that is, there's just a certain number of people that end up sick and in the hospital. And when that number starts to rise, that puts a strain on the healthcare system, and we know that things are getting worse. More people are in the hospital. And you can look at the good thing about Oregon is it does seem to be doing better than last week. We're down in our numbers of daily cases. Those are the case numbers are always, could change a little bit. But the trend line is it was up really high on, December 7th. And then by now, we're down to 682. So we dropped to, from 2144 down to 682, so that's halving of the number of people, and more than that. So it really is nice that we're getting fewer cases. Now, of course, numbers of deaths have gone up in December compared to November, and that reflects the trends that we saw with the high numbers of cases early on. Our number of positive rates, the positivity rate, which is another number that you kind of look at, which is again, that number in Oregon has gone up and down, and in October it was look at these trends, 3.5% weekly average. Now we're at 5.25 or something like that percentage weekly average, with 6 actually. So we definitely went up. Again, in around December 2nd, we were at a weekly average of 9. So again, looking, absolute numbers don't matter, but trends do. And so the numbers trended up at the beginning of the December, and it went down again. And that, we believe, is due to the Thanksgiving travel. Now, let's see. Does anybody have any comments so far on our, I guess I'll go to the numbers real quick. Hospitalization status, we're down from last week, 527. Today, the numbers of people in the ventilators and things like that has pretty much stayed constant. The number of people in the ICU has gone down a little bit, but not much. It's like 119 versus, you know, 132 back when it was at its peak there. So that hasn't changed a lot. So once you're sick and in the ICU, you're probably going to stay there for a while. Okay, any comments or questions about the trends, the daily numbers in Oregon right now? Yeah, I mean, that's just the way it is. Now, the thing is that I think the issue is how good were we about travel, okay? And this is the thing, is we can kind of, there's actually even an index that is put out, which is a social distancing index, and it says that, you know, Oregon, you know, actually our mobility did go up, you know, around the time at Thanksgiving, it started going up, you know, it's fairly constant now, but it's not as high as it was back in October, for instance, you know, so that's good. But nationwide, they said that more people traveled this last Christmas holiday than had traveled at any previous time, you know, more than at Thanksgiving, and so I think that, unfortunately, what we saw is the 2 weeks after Thanksgiving is when we saw that peak in the numbers of people in Oregon. So, you know, that has I'm going to predict an increase in the numbers that we'll see again in 2 weeks now that we're at this low point. We'll be seeing what happened with Christmas travel in about 2 weeks from now. So I'll keep an eye on that. But I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think there's no reason to believe that it would not be like it has been before. So this is all, again, based on our behavior. And the more we travel, the more exposure we have, and the more people get sick. Also, people shopping. I can imagine that, you know, I did see a lot of people in stores when I was out. I still try to do, like, curbside pickup, but I did see a lot of people going into stores. And, again, there are a lot of people who are not symptomatic, and you don't know if you're going to be breathing the air that they were breathing before. And so you'll probably hear some stuff about, again, they're emphasizing the fact that ventilation and indoor spaces is probably the most, being a long time in indoor spaces with people is the worst risk that you can do. And again, we should be trying our darndest to stay out of closed spaces with other people, keeping our distance. You'll hear some stuff about, well, it's not necessary to, you know, wipe off everything. I haven't found any evidence of cases from touching things. At the same time, you know, you can still get the flu and things from touching stuff, and we just don't have that data. I mean, they haven't really found it, but, again, every little thing that you can do to minimize your risk that is not that big of a deal, keep doing it. You know, it's not going to do any harm, and it might still do some good with you in the hand washing. So, again, try to set things up so you don't have to go in places. Cat to the vet today. They come out to your car, take the pet in for you, take it into the doctor, vaccinate it, bring it back out to you. You don't have to go in there. So that's great. Try to find stuff like that. Don't expose yourself unnecessarily. Okay. So let's talk about vaccinations. That's another thing that came up. So Washington, we're starting to pick up our rate of vaccination. We've got nearly 26,000 people vaccinated. That's 25,972 as of yesterday. Probably we're vaccinating people again today, so that's good. Remember last time we go, I think we'd only had about 7,000 people. 3,900 a day was on the 1222, 3,700 on 1221. So we still are only, we did 4,300 today. So we haven't, you know, increased the numbers of people. They didn't really vaccinate very many people at all on Christmas Day, you can imagine. But anyway, they are vaccinating people. And a wide variety of age groups. It does say now that we've got over 750 four people in the 80-plus age group and 765 in that 70 to 79 group, so that's pretty good, 1,500 people. 3,000 in that 60 to 69 group. So anyway, we're chipping away at it, but we need to get a lot of people vaccinated before the vaccines will make a difference. County data now. If you look at the Oregon Health Authority's web page, they tell you which counties are getting vaccinated. They set it up as people vaccinated per 10,000 people. So Marion County has got 62 people per 10,000 people. Multnomah has got 68 per 10,000. Polk County's got 74 per 10,000. Anyway, and they show you the total population. So, like Polk County, they've vaccinated 613 people, but the rate is up. But Multnomah, Clackamas, they've been, 2,500 people vaccinated. Multnomah's had 5,600 people vaccinated. So, anyway, we're getting around there. Some of the, obviously, the smaller counties, Deschutes has 1,300 people vaccinated. Jefferson's got 166 people vaccinated. And 811. So there are people getting vaccinated all over the state already, so that's good.
Comment, Brett?
Okay, yeah, Dan, go ahead. And remember, that's only one dose. Nobody's gotten a second dose yet. So they're not fully vaccinated.
Yes, and they should not have the second dose yet. One of the things I'm hearing from the drug companies, I get quite a bit of email from different places like Walmart, both Walmart and Walgreens. They're actually hiring specific individuals to give injections through some of the larger drugstore companies. So we are not fully geared up yet, and I'm a little disappointed that, somehow people didn't look ahead and say, well, we're going to need these individuals when this stuff is here, and gear up towards a number that is realistic. But they're still hiring for pharmacies that are going to be distributing the injections. I guess part of the problem is that a lot of these people really can't come in to a pharmacy yet because, we're dealing with the care homes and the people in the hospitals. And, of course, people in the hospitals are probably going to have their own individuals to distribute the vaccinations. So, have I got this figured right? Because I am hearing from the pharmacies they are hiring for that purpose. WA7ABU.
Yep, that's what I've heard too. That especially for the Moderna vaccine, which doesn't require the ultra cold freezers. The pharmacies may be the ones that end up even in partnership. They might actually bring the vaccines out to the nursing homes, you know, throughout the different counties in Oregon, especially the, you know, the more widespread in rural areas and things. So, again, we've got to get, I think I came up with this number last week, 350,000 people are in the first group, which consists of the people that are the healthcare workers and the at-risk people in the nursing homes. Got to get through them first before we, you know, start picking it up at your local pharmacy for general public. And if we can gear up and get these things, get them, stuff delivered to us, and I don't have that number about how much has been delivered right now, but I'll find it. But point is that they're getting shipments. They'll get it once a week, and then they'll give it as quickly as they can give it. But the ones that are using the Pfizer vaccine, those clearly have they have to be given in the facility that's got the ultra-cold freezers. And so that's pretty much going to limit us to giving it at those hospitals. Walgreens is not going to have an ultra-cold freezer to store this thing. So they might be able to... again, deal with the Moderna stuff, which to the regular freezer, there's no problem there. They could then start getting that out there. But right now, they want to give it to the healthcare workers and the nursing homes. So. Any other comments on that? Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo, or any check-ins, or anybody else with comments?
I got a question for you, Brett, W7AVIA.
Okay, Dan, go ahead. Yeah, well, if I don't know, I will tell you. I don't know. I can make something up.
Well, since you're not actually a trained inoculator for this particular disease, I don't expect you to know exactly, but there must be an approximation here. On the Pfizer super cold vaccine, you stated that this is actually injected at pretty close to room temperature, that maybe it's 10 degrees colder or something like that, but you don't see anybody reacting in such a way where they've received the Pfizer that they don't seem to be responding to temperature here. How long do you suppose they keep that warm before it's actually injected? And how do they go about this? It seems something that cold, it must have a certain survival period that's pretty reasonable. Once it's warmed up, then they try to use it immediately. So, you know, how close is immediate? And have you heard any numbers about how long it's good once they finally warm it up to room temp, W7AVU?
Yeah, so that information was given in the FDA briefing on it. And the way it works is that, and I have actually done this in the lab, that when they work with RNA, it's a fairly unstable molecule. And so this is a synthetic RNA molecule that they've created, right? And and so it turns out that they have that, and when they make it up originally, what happens is that they mix it up in a solution usually, and put stabilizers and buffers and preservatives and things like that, and then they do something that's called lyophilizing, which is they basically freeze dry. Okay, and so you put it in a vacuum. And you put it in that -70 freezer, and you you pump out all the air, and it basically evaporates all of the liquid component, leaving a residue powder in the bottom of the vial. And then they cap the vial, and you know they do this on an industrial scale. We used to do it like in test tubes, but you know basically you just get this little flaky powder at the bottom of the bottle, and they cap it, and then they keep it cold like that. All right, let me get a drip. Now, reading the instructions on it, it says that, you know, they get saline, which is a, you know, normal saline, which is a standard solution that equals the amount of salt that's in our bloodstream. Sodium chloride in water solution, sterile water. They take 1.8 milliliters out of that saline, squirt it into the bottle containing the powder, and swirl it until it reconstitutes, okay? And that probably happens just almost immediately. It usually that stuff dissolves very, very well. All right? Now, that then makes up enough solution now, once it's mixed up, that you withdraw with the syringe you're going to give the vaccine with, 0.3 ml of drug per person for the dose, okay? So it's got five doses and then a little extra volume in there. You know, in theory, it would have 1.8 ml of solution in there. But they, you know, due to people, you know, when they squirt, get the air out and they squirt it a little bit, they give you a little extra, all right? And that's usually the way most chemicals that are, medicines that are in little bottles. If you've ever given a, you know, an animal vaccine or you know, some kind of drug out of a bottle, that's what it is. So, at any rate, that little 0.3 ml, you've got five people that you're going to give, and they're going to be lined up. And I suspect that they just set it in a little ice bucket, you know, if they had to wait in any time at all. Otherwise, I think they could get through that pretty quickly, injecting five people and being done with it. And they're done with that vial, and you could go on to the next. Now, I don't know how many they would make in advance. You know, it depends, I guess. You have to have someone probably over there putting the 1.8 ml in and getting them mixed up and ready to go. And I would probably suspect that they just put those on an ice bucket while they're waiting. You know, it's my understanding that they can be okay on ice for 6 hours. So, you know, they might mix all this up in the morning. And, you know, so it might be refrigerated temperature, you know, with the first guy that gets it or whatever, but once you have people lined up, it's a very small volume, and it's going to be in a little glass bottle. It's going to warm up in your hand pretty quickly.
BUV with a comment?
Yeah, go ahead, Walt.
So getting back to your earlier statement, yes, on Sunday we did successfully do WindLink back and forth between Marty, although she was Telnet and we were RF to a local site. So, yes, we did get that to happen.
Okay, yeah. So anyway, last night I helped Jeff get their signal link set up, so they now can do it the real way. and they were actually successfully able to send messages via the W7ODN site and also the W7YAM Yamhill site. Both those sent and received WinLink, so we can look forward to that. That was working for them. We're talking about the WinLink system, and that's they're getting ready to do CERT exercises and try to get some WinLink going between Woodburn and Salem. So that's what we're talking about here, and that's another emergency topic.
And as far as our mesh gear, everything is here with the exception of Amazon seems to have lost the LDF unit, but they'll come up with one. It's just was supposed to be today, and then they don't know where it is. So.
Okay, very good. Well, you can start. We can talk about that. I really, the thing is, I think anybody who's doing slow scan TV or something like that, you realize that you have a device which can be used for emergency communications. And if you want to help out and actually send official reports and, it is very helpful to be able to do that in a written form. And WinLink is the way that many, many people around the world deliver those kind of messages. So it requires a little bit of practice, but if you've been doing closed scan TV, it really isn't much different. So you just have to add another program to get it to do packet. And otherwise, you can, it's just a matter of learning to operate an email program that that uses your radio to send it. So it's a useful thing to know how to do. Okay, let's see. Is there anything else you want to talk about with, with the COVID stuff that's new? Okay, so I think one of the things that you're going to find out is news today is, they found the first British variant in Colorado. Okay, so the thing is that this is kind of, unfortunately, in my opinion, a little bit, you're either going to restrict people's travel or you're not going to restrict people's travel. We don't really monitor people's travel well enough. And people can travel all around the world really, really quickly. And so once you see that the variant is outside of Britain and it's in Europe or someplace else, it is probably anywhere. And I think that when you see this, they say there's somebody in Colorado who has it, and what they're saying is that they don't really know. Person has no history of travel, okay? So again, that the fact that he didn't go to England, that probably tells you that, well, it's not going to do us much good to sort of block travel from England. It's already here. And it does seem to be more infectious, but so far they have said that it doesn't seem to be, result in worse symptoms. But it is, they're claiming at this point in time, 70% more infectious than the variant that we're used to having. They call it the UK variant right now. And so you'll start hearing more about that, but, politically or policy-wise, whether you should restrict travel. I think common sense thing is you really shouldn't be traveling around, with the vaccines and everything not in effect yet, and people still showing increased numbers, the trend line's going up, more cases, it means, not the time to travel, okay? And so we know that Britain was also doing the same thing as far as holiday travel that we were. They tried to shut it down, but, their numbers are still going up. And they've actually, I read, they inoculated 200,000 people already in Great Britain. So inoculations aren't going to knock it out right away. It's not going to happen until we get a lot of people vaccinated and they get both doses. We start to see something go down, and that's probably not going to be visible until maybe March or April, whether that's going to happen. Look at some of the projections from Washington on that.
BUV.
Yeah, Walt, go ahead.
Do they have an understanding if the current vaccine is also worthwhile on this new variant?
Not yet on the vaccine. Okay, so they don't think it's going to make any difference. The vaccines are against the spike proteins, and what they've said so far is that because of the way these things were designed, basically when we're vaccinating people, we're using a big chunk of the spike protein that is present on the surface of these cells. Now, these cells may have more spikes or less spikes, but it's the spike that just allows the virus to attach to the cells to inject their payload and get the infection going. So, any vaccine against the spikes, if it's effective, and if they think that they are, is going to be attacking these spikes. Okay, so there isn't any data yet as to whether that is going to be any different. It shouldn't be any different because it's still a spike protein. It's not changed enough to change its functionality. It is interesting. We'll find out more, I'm sure, as the as they study it more in terms of transmissibility. Okay, so, again, another thing you might have heard in the news is kind of interesting, has to do, again, with the slow pace at which we get this knowledge. But we did these clinical trials, and we figured out how to do these two vaccines for Moderna and Pfizer, and what you'll see in terms of people getting their vaccinations is based on, we're going to do it exactly the way they did it in the study. We're going to give the doses the same, and we're going to give it in the same way. But remember, now this is the thing that's not obvious, is that they did not keep track of who had COVID or did not have COVID, and they didn't test anybody other than those who showed symptoms of COVID during the end of the trial to find out whether there was any difference. Once they had enough people who had COVID and proved that they had COVID, they showed that, yes, there was, 94% of efficacy, meaning, 9-to-1 ratio of people who had, in the control group versus the treated group in terms of the numbers that got COVID. But they didn't look at who had COVID before. They didn't look at people who were asymptomatic or anything. All they know is that, yes, when you give it to a large group of people, 30,000 more or more, you get this good effect, and that's what we're basing it on. So what you'll see is that our recommendation is, let me get a trip here. You'll see that people will be recommended to get the vaccine whether they had COVID or not. And that's because it wasn't part of the study. We didn't determine whether, what happens if you had COVID before? Does that make any difference with the vaccine? It wasn't studied. Okay, so that may not make sense to you because, you'll hear that, if you had it, you should be immune to it. But we didn't study that. We have not studied that. They didn't do that as part of their, and this is an emergency authorization to get this stuff going, because we think it's going to be effective. If we waited 3 years, we'd be able to tell you probably whether or not it made a difference, whether how long you are immune after, a bout with COVID and whether the vaccine would help you or not. We didn't ask those questions. We didn't, get any data on it. So we're going to vaccinate everybody that we can. Just want to make sure you guys got that. Any questions about that? Now, again, following along with the University of Washington people, and they're going to get their newsletter about updates on the transmission and the testing, treatment, variety. There's just data that comes in every day, lots and lots of data. Relating to the what we're learning about COVID, and that's interesting to you. Go ahead and again look at when you see a headline. Go ahead and see if you can find the study.
W7NAT.
Yeah, hi Nate. I'll check you in here, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just checking in for the second time today, late. Once at the net control and once to check in. Sorry about that.
Okay, no problems. Anybody else want to check in at this time? Hasn't checked in yet.
KJ7SAD, Daniel.
Okay, so let's see. I got, and you didn't do genetics, and my ears never pick it out. Well, did I copy Kilo Juliet 7 Sierra Alpha Echo, or what could you repeat again?
Sorry about that. That's Kilo Juliet 7 Sierra Alpha Delta. Daniel.
Okay, gotcha, Daniel. Yeah, you checked in before. See, I didn't hear the difference between D and E there on the radio. And that's my poor ears. Yeah, welcome. Go ahead. Did you have any comments or questions on what we've talked about so far or anything else?
No, just very interested in the conversation. Had my first injection with the Moderna earlier today. So, listening. KJ7SAD.
Okay, very good. So you had the Moderna one. So since you're, I think, the first person I've talked to that's actually had the vaccine, and Dan had some questions about, you know, like, is it cold? You know, how do they keep it cold? Could you tell it how does it go? Now, this is the one, that, again, that we don't need to keep in the minus 80 freezer and reconstitute. It's already... I think you thaw it out, and there's 10 doses, if my understanding is correct from reading this stuff. What else can you teach us about it?
Not much. For me, it's very similar to the flu shot. I had a couple coworkers, one who got it yesterday and then went out and worked in his garden and had no effects at all, and then another one who... went home last night, had a serious headache from about 6:30. So she went to sleep and woke up fine this morning.
Okay, very good. So again, did you get it in did they wait? I mean, one of the things we're talking about is like getting through. I mean, how fast can you actually get these injections done? And I said that I think they are monitoring people to make sure that they don't have any side effects for a while. Can you tell us anything about, you know, how long they keep you, you know, before they let you go, and how many people are sort of in line waiting to get this stuff?
Yeah, they had us sit for about 15 minutes and then just leave on our own. Didn't have to check out or anything. I work at the state hospital, so everybody's getting vaccinated there. I guess it was busy in the morning around shift change. I went in midday, no line at all waiting to get it.
Okay, very good. Yeah, but I mean, I guess that's what I thought. So, I mean, that's going to be kind of a limiting factor in terms of, you know, you can't have, 100 people in line and have them all wait 15 minutes, you know, together. You're going to still have to keep them, you know, not piled up in somehow. So I suspect that that's going to slow the rate at which you get through your, you know, your group. And I don't know how many people work with you there. And obviously, you know, they want to try to get everybody vaccinated. And then do they... How are they going to, how do you know on this one, I believe it's 28 days, did they give you some kind of call, you know, take your information and call you, remind you to come in, or I guess because it's at work, someone's going to pull you aside. What can you tell us about how they keep track of you getting a second dose?
They said they would advertise when we hit the 28-day cycle. They broke up the initial injections over 3 days, alphabetical. So first third of the alphabet was yesterday, second third of the alphabet today. And tomorrow is going to be the last, but they'll have makeup sessions for people who are on vacation.
W7NAT.
I think Nate might have a question for you there. Go ahead, Nate.
No, it's for you. I was just letting you know that someone doubled in twice with you when you were talking. Sorry, I didn't. Go ahead.
Okay, so anyway, we're just trying to, you know, since Daniel's first person I talked to is actually, I know another physician got the injection at Salem Health, but I didn't talk to him about the experience. And I suspect it's slightly different if you've got the Pfizer one, because again, they've got to keep it ultra cold until, and it just, you know, can be kept cool, you know, for a few hours. But I suspect that they're not you know, reconstituting all the vials that they need to, you know, and they're probably doing it on demand. The Moderna one is easier. You just, it's already, you can thaw it out and keep it in the fridge for a while. It's not a problem, as far as I understand it. It's frozen, but it doesn't take that long to thaw. And so I don't know handling-wise, it's an easier one to deal with. Let's see. So you guys think you're going to be done pretty soon then with you just went through basically the whole staff in 3 days?
They're hoping to be done. I haven't seen any numbers yet on how many they've actually administered the first 2 days. They give us a nice little paper card, CDC form that they log in on, and we keep the card. And after the second one, that will be good for travel, I guess, to verify that we've been vaccinated.
Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, whether that becomes a thing that as people become vaccinated, of course, you got to get the 2 doses in there, and then we have to, you know, we know that you'll be from the studies, because the studies didn't finish before we approved it, we know that you can get several months of immunity from it, at least 2 or 3 months. You know, so... Yeah, I don't, but we don't know whether it's going to last a year or 2 years or, you know, lifelong or whatever. There's some vaccines that are highly effective and you just get one and as a kid and you're done, you know. But others are given as a series and you have to, you know, have multiple ones. This one, in the way they gave it, it's a, you know, month apart. That's what we're doing right now. And then we'll kind of find out what happens as it goes. But, I have heard, you know, talking about, well, you know, as we maybe having some proof of vaccination would be, you know, a good thing that might allow people to eventually say, okay, well, I, you know, like you said, I could travel or I could go into a, you know, unrestricted area, do my business or whatever, you know, because I'm theoretically vaccinated. So kind of an ID card. And that's an interesting idea. I haven't... I think we have to wait to see just how many people we can get done and focus out on that part of it. Anyway, very good. And actually for you, since you work at the state hospital, I'm probably interested in psychiatry. There was a little bit of news today, and this is not new, but it's been New York Times was reporting on the neurological and psychiatric effects of having COVID. So there, you know, the thing is that there are mental health effects, you know, besides having the, you know, the hardship of being sick or you know, and, you know, obviously there's a mental health aspect of being in a pandemic, right? But it seems that what they have noticed is a very interesting thing is acute psychosis in people and the, you know, who are of an age group that you wouldn't normally expect them to get psychotic symptoms. So let me, I talked to my doctor's son about this today, and we'll try to explain what she said, because she's a neurologist and dealt a lot with people with different types of brain injuries and, you know, psychiatric symptoms. So let me get a drip, I'll try to explain. So when they've looked at people who've had COVID in the hospital, you know, they do find that in some cases, especially in older people, you know, that there are some brain changes that they see. They get encephalopathy, which is like an inflammation of the brain, and you can see that in some people. Not everybody that gets that, but, you know, it seems to be worse in older people. Sometimes you get people with strokes in older people, okay? So those would be neurological problems. There are people who... are complaining, have complained that, you know, even after they recover from COVID, that they, you know, have, some people call it a, you know, brain fog, that they just don't feel like they're, you know, as sharp mentally after having had it, you know, and again, we don't know what the pathology of that is, But it may be, again, as a result of having a neural infection, which seems to occur. Now, the other thing that's interesting is that there are people who are showing psychosis, like paranoia and, schizophrenic-like symptoms, where they're irrational and thinking that they're in danger and have really weird thoughts, and they're thinking about killing their family and things like that. And that is the interest, sort of the new data that's come out, is that a small number of people, seems to be the case. That the only thing wrong with them is that they've had COVID, and they aren't in an age group that you would sort of notice this stuff coming on. So what you normally see, she said, that you normally, if you're going to get psychosis, you tend to get it in like your 20s or your 30s. It shows up first then. But they're seeing, people without any other history of mental illness, like in their 40s and 50s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, which is usually later than psychosis shows up, starting to show this psychosis. And they're going in and needing to get treated for it. And it goes away, as in some people, I guess they were saying, after some treatment. Unexpected psychosis as a result of, having the COVID infection. Any comments on that? Maybe Daniel has some insight on it.
I don't have any comments on that. I'm an administrator and not a clinician, so I'm not any smarter than anyone else. I'm a net tonight, not even close to you, so... But certainly something to worry about. I saw the article, and it keeps me on my toes.
Yeah, so again, I guess that's the thing, is that we have to look beyond just the fact that, if you start thinking about this illness as something that affects an entire population of people, there's more than just that, there's some people that die, and some people that have to go to the hospital and some people that, recover and some people that never really show any symptoms. But, we keep getting more information about people who really don't fully recover from this thing. And they end up with decreased productivity at work less stamina or difficulty concentrating or these psychotic things. So, it's not a good illness to get, and it's going to affect a lot of people for a long time, and that hopefully that's better to prevent it than to recover from it, I guess. This is a Kilo Golf 7 Golf Delta Bravo. We can talk about something else if you'd like. But there was always in the news, and I want to make sure that you people have a good situational awareness that I think we were doing we're doing the right thing in Oregon as far as trying to protect ourselves. So certainly, people who are on this net listen to us. All along, I try to give this information to you so you can make informed judgments, when you see trends going up, that's not the time to travel. When we get things recovered and more on a flattening of the curve and people start getting vaccinated, the vaccines will work better when there's fewer people actively getting the infection. And that's just a math problem. That's just the odds of encountering people. So, I think you probably have as much information as you need right now. And as far as the only new information is that I did hear that the British people are trying to, might have a third vaccine, the AstraZeneca vaccine. I've not heard that they've really applied to the FDA for approval yet, but it sounds like this is a new kind of vaccine. It works in a slightly different way. but it is one of the least expensive and easiest ones to make a lot of and distribute. So if that really is a vaccine that works and Britain approves it and starts testing it out, maybe it will give us another tool. We will be getting more vaccines, and that one they didn't have the best data on their clinical trial, but it might. They are claiming still it's an effective vaccine, so we'll see how that goes. We'll let you know more when we find out. Let's see. Oh, I know when it's, again, this is the, notice that the weather has turned cold here lately. You might want to talk just a little bit about winter driving. Seems that, you know, Dan was just noticing yesterday a couple accidents, including a fatal one out in Silverton. That people seem to be, I don't know, very distracted with driving. I'm not sure what's going on. But distracted driving and cold weather, you know, this is something that, you know, again, emergency preparedness-wise, think about the cold weather. Do you have stuff in your car? Do you have some sort of go kit? Do you have blankets? What if you're, if you go off the road in the ice and you're, you know, you get stuck, you know, and you're in a rural place or something? You know, do you have your a way of contacting anyone? You know, there are places that don't get cell phone coverage. And that's why we like our ham radios. But is your ham radio ready to go? Have you tested it in your car? You know, it's not something you just keep in your glove compartment. You want to make sure you use our noontime nets or other nets to check in with these things from your car. Make sure it's working. Okay, take part in some exercises. Make sure you're really familiar and can use it, you know, where it is that you can use your radio. Do that now while it's, you know, before the emergency. I think you'll, that's just general advice there. But does anyone have any good winter driving tips that they've found that they always do that they'd like to pass on to anyone else or any other winter preparedness now that we're in the cold weather and rainy weather. Okay, well, anyway, I did learn, I think it was last year, we had a freezing rain situation. I really hate the freezing rain. I think that's the worst. Probably you do, too. We've had a lot of fog this year. The fog has been pretty bad. Obviously, you want to keep your distance in the fog from people away from you, even if you can, you know, see them. If people are not reacting, or there's a lot of wildlife out, too, actually. I think there's more deer this year than I've seen at any other time, they had one jump out in front of me just the other day when I was coming into my driveway. You can't predict that kind of stuff, and so if you're driving in the fog and there's deer and you hit your brakes and the guy behind you is riding your tail, you know, you're going to have an accident. So just remember that keeping your distance is probably the most important rule in any kind of winter driving. Cold weather. Remember to, you know, have things in your car that you can, as a kind of a go kit in your car. I think it's a great place to keep a go kit. Not only is it sort of ready to go if you need to evacuate your house for some reason, but it's a reasonably safe environment for things. But make sure that if you've got things like batteries it's probably better not to keep them in the flashlight. I've personally had some leakage destroyed by a nice headlamp from batteries left in the device. And so, you know, you might want to check batteries that are in that go kit, make sure they haven't leaked, make sure they're, you know, those lights are working, and then remove the batteries until you need them. Of course, extra clothing and a little bit of food, maybe some power bars or something like that, that's something that you can keep in your car. that won't go bad too quickly. All else fails, get yourself a jar of peanut butter, providing you can eat peanut butter. It keeps a long time. It's cheap and has tons of calories in it. So it's a great, great item that you can have there. You can have some, if you have traction devices, bring them along with you, and it might need them. I found that in the, we had some freezing rain, and my daughter was driving it, and the car, even though it was four-wheel drive, slid and then went into an embankment, sort of at the front of the car was, sort of T-boned into the embankment, and the car wouldn't back up, couldn't go forward, couldn't go back, and I used the carpet from the car under the rear tires. I pulled the carpets out of the back seat and put them under the rear tires, and that gave enough traction to get out of on the ice. So keep in mind that things like that can help you if you get stuck. Some people carry things like bags of the old-fashioned cat litter as a traction aid if you get a slippery surface. Okay, make sure that, if you're using GPSs and things like that you kind of know. Again, this is probably the time to be exploring in the fog for things, but remember your GPS isn't a substitute for to follow it blindly. I think that is something that also people are doing, especially delivery drivers, so watch out for them, is because they'll say, sometimes it's not obvious where the turn is, that they're going to turn, and all of a sudden they need to turn. So, again, keeping your distance is helpful. And anyway, I hope you try to avoid accidents. Let people know when you're going, and text them when you get there, so they're not worried about you. That's another thing we like to do. Okay, are there any other final comments for the emergency prep net here? It will be the last one of 2020. Come now, please. Okay, hearing none, I hope there's still people listening to me, but I will go ahead and let you know that it is now 8.02 p.m., and this concludes the 529 Emergency Preparedness Net. Richard's been recording these things. If you choose to listen to them, they'll be on the WA7ABU groups.io page. We have recordings from times past. I can say if you missed any or would like to look at those, we're keeping them kind of as an archive. Anyway, we meet each Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. on 145.29 megahertz. Our thanks go out to Dan, WA7ABU, for the use of this repeater. Thanks to all who participated today and those who stood by to give us a third channel. This is Kilo Golf 7, Golf Delta Bravo, now closing that at 8.03. We now return the repeater to normal, undirected and amateur operations. KG7 GDB. I'll talk to you tomorrow on the TechNet.
Thank you, Brent. Haven't heard you for a while, so I appreciate W7NAT.
As a more complete food for the emergency preparedness there, Brett, just a second. We used to find peanut butter and jelly in a jar ready to spread, that would be even better, WA7ABU.